Christina coming in. Christiana coming in. Good morning, Christiana.
Good morning.
Nice to see you.
Good morning. Nice to see you too. Happy New Year to
Thank
all.
you. Where are you calling from?
Athens, Greece.
In Greece. Oh,
Yes.
wonderful.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll get started, everyone. So, welcome and thank you very much for joining the political pod, which Diana, as you know, has been running for the last number of months. And Fiona and Lydia and I are very happy to take the reins for her, particularly Fiona and Lydia. I'm just here today as a guest and also a support worker. But thank you all for joining all over the world. We really, really appreciate you coming along today. And I'm very, very happy to introduce you to Dr. Wassim Dabbouk. And he's from the University of Southampton. And as you may have read, he attended the COP28 in Dubai, which is very exciting. And he's currently researching mindfulness, shifting mindsets around the climate emergency. So we're going to welcome him today to his interview. And he's going to talk a little bit about what climate coaches need to know about the challenges facing delegates as they move on from COP, and what's affecting the research and the activist community, and what support young, indigenous, and underrepresented groups most need from us. So those are the three areas we're going to cover today. And I thought I'd explain that you may not be familiar with the acronyms that we are going to be using. So UNFCCC is the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. And RINGO represents research and independent NGOs. And YOUNGO represents children and youth. I just thought I'd explain those three so everybody's familiar with that. And I'll just check to see if anyone's out. Right. Okay. So, welcome, Wassim. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Jackie. Very happy to be here and really pleased to be invited to take part in this session. Very
Lovely.
much looking forward to it. And I mean, just having hearing some of the conversations as you were welcoming people to the session, I just wanted to say that I'm here also to share my experiences, share my reflections as much as possible, work with others, and help them improve their careers and their, I mean, what they're working on. But I'm also here to learn from everyone else. I think it's a space where we're all mutually learning from each other. Really excited for the session, and yeah, happy to be here. Thank you.
Great, thanks, Wassim. So I'd like to begin by asking you, what do climate coaches need to know about the challenges facing the party delegates during the negotiations at the UNFCCC meetings? And I suppose the first bit is, what are they trying to achieve, really?
Maybe I can add a bit of a short bit of introduction as well before I get to that, just to
Please
highlight
do.
the my experience at these meetings. Maybe it would help people understand where I'm coming from. So I've been part of the University of Southampton's delegation to three of these meetings. So being COP26 in Glasgow, COP27 in Sharm El Sheikh, and the United Nations Bonn Climate Change Conference in Bonn last year, which is referred to as SB, usually the subsidiary bodies meeting. And I was an observer with the University of Southampton at those meetings, whereas last year, this November, December, the past November, December, I was part of the Lebanese delegation as a party delegate, which gave me a very different sense of the proceedings. So I think having had those different experiences, I can really see the variety of the experiences that different people would have at those meetings and the challenges that come with them and what they're trying to achieve and so on. So just to go back to your question about the challenges that party delegates face, I think the first thing that we need to keep in mind, especially from the coaching community, is that these United Nations climate change conferences are some of the biggest conferences in the world, and they're becoming bigger and bigger. There's representation from almost all the United Nations states and observer states at those conferences. And all of these, the delegates representing those states and observer states are trying to achieve a consensus on the global measures to be taken to address the existential threat of climate change. But maybe I, as a caveat, I would highlight that consensus does not mean unanimity. So it's and the United Nations summits and conferences, there's the way that decisions are taken is by, I mean, whenever there isn't a clear objection against a draft text that is being put forward, then there's an assumption that there is consensus upon it. And there are different ways that states can show reservations about some aspects of the text and so on. But for the sake of moving things forward, we're not seeking unanimity. And even when we're just looking to achieve consensus, things are slow, as everybody would know. And I think there's a lot of challenges, but I think that in the face of those challenges, if I wanna try to group my ideas, you know, and try to be as practical as possible for the audience, I think climate coaches need to be very well prepared. I think if I wanna use key points, they will need to be very, very well prepared, and I'll get into the details of what they need to be prepared for. And they need to be very, very empathetic as well on about the emotional stress that party delegates go through, and the intellectual and, you know, interrelational challenges that they would have in trying to interact with other delegates and trying to achieve that consensus that I've mentioned. So things that I would highlight is, for example, the fact that states coming into those meetings have really different statuses going into those meetings, very different interests and very different priorities that they're trying to preserve, you know, and push forward, and that these priorities often clash with each other. And clearly this is the challenge that we face at those events. But I wanted to get into a little bit of more details about why there's this inevitable complexity at COPs in particular. And I would, for example, as an example, I would highlight the fact that as we all know, there's a lot of the climate crisis has been, there's a lot of tension between the groups of the states that have been major contributors in the crisis that we're in, that are being requested or required to adopt mitigation measures to stop, you know, to stop climate change, whereas there's a lot of other states that are more concerned with adapting and recovering from climate change and had much less to do with causing the crisis in the first place. So that's a very clear tension between those two, which we often hear about in the news. But there's also, we need to also keep in mind the fact that each state is representing the interests of their own nationals, including private interests. And those private interests can cross the boundaries as well that we have for states. You know, some of these private interests could be working together in initiatives outside the sphere of states. But states have a relationship with them, and they're also trying to preserve those to boost their economies and so on. And to add to that as well, for example, the states work within, especially, it is particularly helpful for smaller states, I would say, or states with smaller diplomatic weight in those negotiations. But states work together in groups and what are being called negotiating blocks. So they reflect common positions or perspectives around the challenges or around different items of agenda items at those meetings. And even within those negotiating blocks, so Lebanon, for example, is part of the group of 77 and China and the Arab group. But even within those groups, there's a challenge of coordination and trying to make your position stand out, you know, or like make sure that you're putting your position forward as part of that group. And there's a challenge even there with trying to make sure that you're being represented when you then, as a negotiating bloc, you go and engage with another negotiating bloc to try to achieve consensus. So these are just some examples of the inevitable complexity in achieving the consensus. And I think that climate coaches must be aware of them while they're working with their clients. And what is it? And I think I maybe as a common denominator for everything I'm going to say now, I think the common climate changes need to really always be on the search and try to seek to understand what their clients are trying to achieve. I think that's the thing. But having that awareness of the fact that there are different things, very, very diverse activities that they could be involved in, and agendas that they have, personal agendas that they want to push forward while they're at those meetings, is really a good bit of preparation. I think another really important bit of preparation would be to know what are the contentious points at those meetings, at the specific COP or a subsidiary body meeting that they're attending. It's really, there's a lot of history and context around those contentious points. And when the item became on the agenda and how it relates to other items of the agenda. Because a lot of the times party delegates would have to, a big part of diplomacy is making concessions, you know, and just, the word is skipping me now, but making compromises, that was the word. So making some compromises on some items so that they can make progress and secure other items. So, and there's a lot of different positions, you know, that states would have, and these positions are reflected in a lot, in the different stages of the process as well. There's a lot of chats that are happening, as they say, in the corridors, and as when delegates are trying to push and make some progress to achieve that consensus that I was talking about. And then in all of these, I think it's really important for negotiators to have that skill and employing that of employing the appropriate negotiation diplomacy skills. And also have, the negotiators need to employ those skills and also the right terminology and formulations to reflect the positions of their delegations. And so I think in all of that, climate coaches need to really familiarize themselves as much as possible with these tensions, because otherwise they would risk being irrelevant, maybe it might be unrealistic, you know, and could be counterproductive for their clients who are much more aware of these contentious points. I think you need to be as focused as possible to help them advance to help them make progress with what they're trying to achieve around those tension points. And I think there's also some role that the climate coaches can play in helping their clients with thinking practically as well in the first place and perceiving the complex issues that they're dealing with as simply as possible. So as much as there are contentious points and that they're related to each other in sometimes very complex ways, I think climate coaches can help them see it more practically. And that would help them be more efficient. That would help the negotiators become more efficient and understand the practicality, the applications of what they're doing. Another bit of really important preparation is knowing what the different bodies involved in the process do. And there's many, many, different roles for different bodies. There's the secretariat, there are the subsidiary bodies, the president of the COP has different roles, the role of observer organizations, which we will get to, what ad hoc working groups do as well, committees, etc. So with all of these different groups, the negotiators would interact with them very differently, and their role and the expectation of what they are to achieve and interacting with each of those, or the position that they would hold, the hat that they would wear, would be very different. So they need to, I think that coaches must familiarize themselves again. So that's a bit of preparation of the type and the outcomes that are expected to be produced by these bodies, for example, the subsidiary bodies, and where they fit within the process. How are they then, for example, for the subsidiary body outcomes, how are those then taken forward and potentially adopted, you know, by the COP and et cetera? So this really requires an understanding of the different stages of the process, from climate coaches during COPs. So, for example, just to be a bit more practical, and that's something that I've only learned, and I got into like practically in the last COP as a party delegate. You know, the first week is really focused on the technical negotiations, and the point is to produce draft texts with some options that then can be deliberated upon in the second week, which is dedicated for high level ministerial and heads of states meetings. And then that's followed by formal adoption of the final outcomes on the different items of the agenda at the closing plenary. So when and for example, when progress is challenging around some of those items, you often see the COP of the president of the COP intervening and trying to play some role and bring the views together by engaging with different delegations and negotiating blocks. So in all of these, I think what I'm trying to say is that there's very different roles that are expected from delegates at those COPs, and that coaches must be aware of those very different hats that they're wearing. And to do that, they must understand these procedural aspects of the process to provide their clients with the most relevant guidance and support.
Yeah, I think Wasim, I'm going to just pause you there just a second, give you a chance to have a bit of a break and a glass of water maybe. And thank you so much, because I think we got so much information there about what climate coaches need to be aware of. I mean, so much, you know, you started talking about being empathetic, you know, making sure that they create good relationships. But also, you know, the information that we need to that all the different complexities that you've mentioned, you know, the those people who are coming with their own interests, for example, you know, and actually helping them to get clarity. I think that's one of the key things that you said, you know, to help them to be clear, to take clear steps, not to be immersed in all the emotional stuff that, of course, is natural for them as well. And I think coaches are so well placed to be able to be facilitative in that area. So really important points. Thank you so much. And then the next question I'm going to ask you is about your research, a little bit about what climate coaches need to know about the challenges facing researchers and the activist community looking to influence the policy making, etc. Just briefly on that one.
So in my view, I think clearly I'm at the University of Southampton, also part of the public policy unit, where our point is really to help researchers with engaging with policymakers, including at the international stage. That was one of the reasons why I'm at those meetings. And I've been really, really trying to find, I mean, it's a frustration for scientists generally when you see, I mean, more than others, I would say, you know, because they're much closer to the science, they know the solutions, and they, a lot of the times, I think they might oversimplify it in their minds, you know, and be like, the solution is very clear. You clearly need to do 1, 2, 3, and then that's it. You know, why are we wasting so much time? Why has it taken, I mean, this whole process started in 1992, you know, it's 2024, and we've made very, very little progress. And I think it makes it difficult for them to even celebrate the small successes. What I'm trying to say is that, I mean, being on both sides of the fence, you know, I think I was having a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday about this, and I felt like I was really humbled by being a party delegate this year in Dubai, and by just getting a real sense of that complexity and how difficult it is to really find those. How difficult diplomacy is, you know, how it requires a whole different set of skills and mental and emotional resilience, you know, that's unimaginable. You know, honestly, I think where I'm personally not up for it, I feel like I'm really exhausted and drained after spending a week there. So I think what I'm trying to say is that I think the scientific community in particular could feel either that they're being left out of the process, generally, they're being left out, they're not being heard in the first place, that the science is not getting through at all, or that even if it's getting through and there are some mechanisms that are already in place, which you can find out if you just do a bit of a Google search, you'd find a lot of apparent mechanisms. It feels like they're being relegated. Their science and their knowledge is being relegated and against the political priorities of the delegates, which is a hard reality to accept for them. But I don't think there's an easy way to say this, honestly. I think what climate coaches need to can help the research community of in doing is for them to accept that the science, the progress in these meetings is not going to rely only on the science. It's going to be underpinned by the science, but there's a lot of other considerations that goes through the parties' minds. As I mean, I just highlighted some of the complexities that they have when they're there representing their countries. So it's a bit of an expectation management exercise that climate coaches need to do in the first place, because if scientists go there thinking that they're going to change the world in one meeting or but one piece of evidence around something that could help us find a global solution for climate change, then they're going to be really disappointed, and that's not good for anybody. And I think that, but it's not all grim, because there are mechanisms, there are pathways for research organizations to engage with the process. And then, I think climate coaches have a role to play there in familiarizing themselves and preparing themselves and knowing what are those mechanisms and how can the research organizations engage through them. And this is where, for example, Ringo, which we'll get to a little bit in a little bit more detail, the constituency of the UNFCCC that you've mentioned in the beginning of the session. But I think it's better to start by highlighting the difference between observer organizations and party delegates and at these meetings, because observers participate. So observer organizations, which include non-governmental organizations, international organizations and research organizations, even young groups and so on. So communities, underrepresented communities and so on, they're all part of, they usually would have a yellow badge, which has observer on it. And then it allows you to attend some of the meetings in that capacity. And the point is for them to ensure the transparency of the process and that the negotiations are aligned for the research community, that they're aligned with the most with the best available science. But again, I think we need to really keep in mind that this is a party-driven process, and that at the negotiation stage, which is usually when those summits happen, there it's too late for the science to feed into it. This the research is done before, and the engagement is done before. So I think what research organizations can do, for example, is engage with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, the IPCC, in producing science there that's commonly referred to in COP decisions, for example, and that's a slower process than engaging within the COP itself. And also, I think another really good, I think really impactful, but lower chance, I mean, I think international research organizations have a lower chance of achieving is because it's a party-driven process. Whilst they're at those meetings, they can interact directly with party delegates, with the people who are sitting at the negotiations and trying to influence or even review, sense check the draft decisions that are being discussed. So there, that's a really very different also. I think researchers or scientists work generally a lot of, I mean, I think we're moving closer towards that, but there's a bit of a piece, like a skill set that's additional to what they already do. You know, like academics are more concerned with writing proposals for grants, publishing, teaching, and so on. And it's a very different type of communication that they would have when they're working with party delegates who really don't have any time, you know, and they're under immense pressure. Even if you have been a researcher who is engaged with policymakers at other levels, let's say local, with your local municipality or with like your country's government or parliament and so on, which we do at the public policy unit here, it's a whole other game when you go to a COP. So again, climate coaches need to be empathetic of that and prepared for that and try to find out which of those pathways are the clients trying to be on. Are they trying to go through the slower route of trying to feed into the IPCC reports or being participating inside events that take place in the blue zone at COPs? Well, they might have a chance of engaging with party delegates a little bit and so on, but they're trying to convey the science at the sidelines of the COP. Or are they sitting right behind the party delegate on a negotiating table and whispering in their ear and trying to get their hands on the latest draft text that they're sense checking and making small tweaks? You know, they need to, are they trying to develop some, and if they're on that pathway, basically what I'm trying to say, they really need to, then the researchers themselves need to familiarize themselves with the work of the party delegates, and so do the climate coaches. So it's a very different task again. So it's about what they want, but there are pathways.
So what you're saying for me, I think thank you, Fiona and Lydia, for putting it in the chat. Those of you who haven't seen that they are putting key points in the chat, which is really helpful. Thank you very much. And you know, you're talking about diplomacy skills, aren't you, here very much? And I think, again, you know, coaches are very well placed with those, and also seeking to understand the different agendas that you're talking about. Yeah. Really important point, I think. And also, you know, what the different bodies do. To inform ourselves, you know, with the IPCC report as well as, you know, the other things you've mentioned. But I want to carry on now just to the last question, Wasim, because it's such an important one. You know, how can coaches be better prepared and know the challenges about young Indigenous and underrepresented groups and looking to influence policymakers around global challenges of climate change in that realm?
Yeah.
Just 5 minutes we've got for that one.
Yeah, no problem. I mean, what I'm going to say now applies to a lesser, I would say personally, I'm not a psychologist, but I assume that it applies to a lesser extent to the other two groups that we've already talked about. I think it's an emotional stress for everybody being at those summits, but it is particularly affecting young people, Indigenous groups, and underrepresented groups, because these are the groups that are mostly affected by the impacts of climate change. And they're the ones that feel the most highest levels of helplessness when they're trying to address it. And I think, I want to take the young groups, young people, and as a specific example. You know, we often hear about climate anxiety, and that's really, really real. You know, like when you're the future livelihood, I mean, your current and future livelihood depends on it. If you want to think about your children in the future and so on, it's really associated with such a negative emotion of anxiety there. And what's really interesting is that it's really generally linked also with a dissatisfaction with their government's response with regard to the emergency. So there's this sense of great frustration in their minds, a perception of betrayal almost from their governments, which then feeds back into that anxiety, and then you get stuck in a vicious circle. So it's really emotionally challenging for them. And I think more so than the other two groups, I think climate coaches need to be really careful with managing their emotions about the crisis. And again, I think they can try to influence the process. They can have different ambitions at these meetings, you know. So again, using the young people as an example, I've met a lot of them who were trying to influence the process, and their aims and ambitions were to try to influence it from within. So they wanted to become party delegates themselves. So they wanted to go and learn those essential diplomacy skills, and they're getting specialized training in those areas and so on. So if the climate coach working with, if their client is a young person who's trying to be on that pathway, then again, they would need to familiarize themselves with the works of party delegates, what their challenges are, what are the skills that they would need to develop and so on. And then they can really help them leapfrog, honestly, like they could really overcome some of, I mean, they wouldn't have to learn, they can learn from other people's experiences if the climate coach that they're working with is aware of those challenges. And I think that another pathway can be that soft influence approach, which I briefly talked about for research organizations as well. So there are some pathways there. The young people can be there raising their voice inside events, making sure that they're being represented at side events, but also in sessions organized by the secretariat, like plenary sessions. You know, particularly, I wanted to talk about these constituencies of the UNFCCC. So like Ringo for research organizations, like Jungo for young people. And these constituencies, I mean, being part of them, being part of those constituencies has a lot of benefits for those individuals, because they would have usually daily meetings where they would get their hands on really valuable information about the developments that are happening, some meetings that they can attend. They can get the chance of making interventions even at plenary sessions. And I've seen that happen, for example, this year in Dubai at the end of, and there are some plenary sessions for different groups, for different, representing different bodies, and some that bring all of them together, and you get the, after the states express their positions about a draft decision, a draft document, for example, then the observers and constituencies are given the chance to take the floor and to make a statement that, you know, can or cannot affect things. So again, it's a very different approach that they can take, you know, and I think apart from that, a human element, I would say, for climate coaches to be very aware of how they can manage the emotions of these groups. I think the other aspect is to, again, continue to find out what pathway they want to be on and to tailor their support accordingly. I think I would leave it here. I would leave it there.
That's great, Wasim. Thank you so much. I think so much information there, which has been very relevant to us, you know, to I think a lot in the chat. If you'd like to take the chat and save the chat, you can. Those of you who are on here, do save the chat, because that was really important, I think. So there are various bits there. I think I'm going to literally summarize that last piece about being very much aware of the emotions that young people are going through. And actually, one of the things that I think is really important, I'm reading a book at the moment called Generation Dread, which, if none of you have read it, it's absolutely wonderful book, talks a lot about young people being very, very concerned, anxious, worried, afraid. And we need to sit with those emotions, not deny them. We need to be with those emotions. We need to allow them to arise and not deny them, and not be all happy clappy, you know, and hope that you know, always good, you should be hopeful. No. Actually, those emotions are very raw, very real. And as coaches, I think we need to inform ourselves much more about how we cope with those emotions, how we sit with those emotions, how we acknowledge them, and how we help them to come with little threads of hope from those deep and dark places. So that last piece was really important, I think, Wasim, and it's a place where coaches are particularly well skilled, if they've got NLP skills and things like that to bring to the table. Really important. So thank you so much for your wisdom. No problem. And we would love to now break out to go into breakout rooms. And the question is in the chat, I think, as you have. But what is coaches now? What are now coaches now called to do as a result of hearing what Wasim has had to say and of the various points in the chat? And we're going to put you into breakout rooms with three each. So I'm going to ask Lydia and Fiona to organise that for us. And Lydia has put the question in the chat. Thank you, Lydia.
How long do the breakouts last, Jackie?
We've got 20. Wait a minute, let me just make sure I've got that timing right here. We've got 20 minutes for breakouts.
Okay, so roughly till 9:30.
Yeah.
Do you want, can you stay and I go into a breakout?
Yeah,
what about
absolutely.
Volker and Christiana? Christiana, do you want to go into a breakout? Unfortunately, I'm going to, Christiana is not, one breakout has only two people, which is a bit weird.
All right. Maybe you could join that one then.
Well, no, because
no, it's Alison and Fiona.
Yeah.
Can you move Christiana in with Alison?
I just feel I can't move now. They've gone.
Okay, all right. But Christiana hasn't joined yet, has she?
I think she's gone off.
All
but
right.
anyway, Ruby and Sue will have a great chat. Oh, we stopped recording.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. So we would love to hear from some of you, if you are happy to share with the group any feedback or any thoughts or ideas that you've had whilst you've been talking to each other. So we're going to open the mics now and let it be some of you talking rather than us. So please do put a flag up or put your hand up if you'd like to give some feedback or to give some ideas to the group. We would love to hear from you. Who'd like to begin?
Well, I'm happy to begin.
Thank you, Deborah. Welcome.
Thank you. That was very interesting. Now I really feel stressed, to be honest, because so we were lucky to have Walker. I was with Denny Walker and Angie, and Walker have also experimented this kind of session and explain a bit. And I feel there's no time. It's very rational and very pressure, and so I can feel it in my body now. And maybe because we were stopped, and what was popping up as coaches, what we could do. And again, I'm using to work in companies, and I feel like here it's the same. This is the time. He told us there is hundreds of meetings in the same hours. And so maybe something as coaches we could offer every day, the end of the day, in the morning and in the end of the day, is really a safe space to be able to be grounded and kind of, I use the word composting emotion, and who want to come. Because there's no space for that, that's really what I understand. And I was touched by two things: the system, how we must understand the process and the different role and everything, the diversity, and the emotion, how, and especially the young, but I guess everybody, are really affected because everything is fast. And so maybe as coaches, what we can really offer during the meeting, I'm not, that can be before, but during these three amazing weeks, is every morning to be there and hold space with exercise, with facilitation, to be grounded and to be really able to go through our emotion and feel ready in the morning, maybe for lunch and for dinner, I would say, and help people to stay healthy, emotionally, spiritually, physically healthy, because they know their work. So, so that's what popped up for me after our discussion. And thank you, because really I felt it. It was very stressful just hearing and being more in the imagination of what's happening. Thank you.
That's wonderful, Deborah. Thank you so much. And I think Lydia's captured that very nicely in the chat for us. Thank you very much for that, Deborah. Who else? Jenny.
I'm happy to speak, and the people I was with, please do shout out if I've not said something. I think the realization for us generally was it is very complex, and what we can do is very complex. A key thing is we can continue to learn as climate coaches and find out more and dig deeper so that we are more aware ourselves. And really to look at our circle of influence as to how we can, because the question came up is, well, do we have to work with governments to be able to change things? And can we, are we in a position to do that always, or can we get that work or whatever? But maybe we look at who are, what our circle is, who's in our circle, who are the stakeholders within that circle of influence, and how we can influence there. And I'm kind of sifting what was discussed in our group and thinking, well, okay, maybe as a coach now, it's time to decide to focus on a particular area. I mean, some people are already working with private organizations, some people are working with governments, some people are working with younger people, but is it that we might have more impact with as coaches if we choose to focus in an area and then direct our acquiring of knowledge and how we work with the people in that situation, so that we have a bigger, faster impact in our own little circle. And also not to forget that our circle of influence is quite wide. I work with an all-party parliamentary group in London, and it's very hard to change the circle of influence, to change the thinking there with the party politics that go on and so on. But we can, influence can be big steps or little steps, but it's influence. Whatever we do, we can influence change. And I think as coaches, we can acknowledge that part of a role is to influence as well.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Jenny. That sometimes in our coaching training, we're told, you can't be mentoring, you can't be consulting, you can't be. And Lydia and I just had a quick chat about that. And actually, here I think sometimes we can pass on those empathetic skills, those softer skills that are needed, and we can influence, and it can be small steps. So thank you for that. I think that's really valuable. Anyone else like to give us a little bit of feedback from their breakout room? It'd be lovely to hear from all of you.
Well, if I can contribute,
Thank you.
I was also delegate on COP26 in Glasgow, and all the pressure and what stems from there. But what I miss currently in climate coaching community is focus. What are we talking about? I'm climate scientist, I'm a coach. I'm still not sure what climate coaching is in terms of, if we want to get involved in COP, that's public sector, that's governments. Are we talking about coaching governments and coaching public sector? Are we talking about, I have a pro bono project that I'm delivering in Croatia. We organize the leadership and coaching workshops for young scientists. As I know, lots of young scientists have I would say, don't know how to cope with stress and what invited speaker was saying. Are we talking in influencing the private sector? Is it coaching then? Because it's not us to pose. If we are coaching, it's not us to pose the subject. It's on coachee. So I'm still not sure. I'm kind of lacking focus in our discussions. Okay, we are talking a lot about climate change and coaching, but what we are talking in terms of our actions from each of us that we can contribute in these topics.
Yeah, that's a really important point, Marco. Thank you for bringing that to us. I think focus is really important, and I think that's probably something that we all need to think about. Where is our focus? Where are we best placed? Where is our circle of influence? And finding that out and being very clear about that is really important. So thank you for that. Anyone else like to jump in? I'd like to welcome Aya, actually. Just yes, there you are, Aya. You were at COP as well, Aya, weren't you? Would you like to come in here to give your voice to the group? You're on mute at the moment. We can't hear you at the moment, Aya. You're on mute. Can I see if I can unmute you?
Sorry that I was talking to different people. Sorry.
So, are you not able to speak?
Yeah, I can speak now.
Okay. So, you know, I'd love to hear your view and what you feel about what Marco has just said, also about the focus for climate coaches. What would be your opinion be there?
Focus for climate coaches. Sorry, I didn't hear because I was on the other phone. So.
Yes, the focus for climate coaches, as a result of hearing what has happened at COP, where are the areas that you feel would climate coaches can best support?
I was attending COP28 this year for Dubai, and then there was 225 pavilions in that COP, and then 100,000 people attended. That is huge. And in addition to just the negotiation, the body of negotiation main part, there are so many discussions, so many workshops, so many dialogues happening. And then most of the time that is done by like the organizer of each pavilion. But I thought that we can have a lot of contribution we can do for the leaders so that they can have more deep dive discussion in a fair way. I think that's the focus area, what we can, as coach, can bring a lot of contribution, like go more to the leader, climate leader, like help them to explore their own thinking, deep dive, why they are saying so. A lot of discussion was happening around, of course, in Japan point of view, a lot of technology, not only Japan, but also other Western countries are maybe very good at technology side, but it's more like humanity side to be integrated. And then for this kind of like understanding each other things, and that climate coach can contribute a lot of things. And I think that is a focus area for us to contribute.
Yes. Great. So you're talking about supporting leaders to go deeper into their thinking, to actually explore why and what and how they are thinking and around this topic. Yes, I think that's a great area that coaches are quite good, aren't we? We're quite sort of with our incisive questioning, we can help them to go deeper.
And in terms of like system coaching, like what kind of things? Sometimes for the climate issue, it's out of our imagination, the many dots is so connected to complexity. So I think like system thinking wise, it's also we can contribute that usually that like researcher are talking only about the researcher, government people are talking only about the government, and business people are only. So like connecting those like system thinking way is very helpful too.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much for that, Aya. And then Lydia again put that into the chat, so I'm not going to repeat that. So great. Thank you for your input. So Fiona, do you want to open your mic?
No, I think it is open actually.
All right.
I just actually put in the chat because I was thinking we might be running out of time. Christiana in our group was describing this beautiful approach that she's been trying where they've been taking clients outdoors and looking at native plants. And we were just getting really into that as we were cut off by time. But, you know, how many associations that has with kind of ancient Greek philosophy and things like that. And just people reconnecting with the ground. And we were talking about the need to step out of conventional standard Western approaches of coaching, you know, being happy, particularly with young people, to advise at times, you know, and help people see different options and different pathways they could take. And I just briefly wanted to give a promo for the Education Pod next week, because next Monday at 7 p.m. GMT, They've got a speaker who I've met before, Burnsy Betit-Sekawong from Cameroon, talking about his Green Academy Spaces work with young people. So anyone who's interested in working with young people might find that particularly interesting.
And that's Monday at 7 p.m.
Monday at 7 p.m. G, yeah, 1900
right.
G, yeah.
Yeah.
It's all on the CCA website.
Okay, CCA website, great. Okay, thank you, Fiona. That's brilliant. Well, yeah, we've only got a few minutes left, so we've got place for one more person to give some feedback. I don't know, Wasim, if you want to come in again, or whether anybody here, Dennis or Ruby or Diana or anyone else would like to pop in. Anyone else? What you learned from your breakout room, or whether you've got any feedback?
I'm happy to say a couple of words.
Thank you.
I was very lucky to have been paired with Sue Mitchell. There was only the two of us in our breakout room. And Sue, feel free to jump in. I learned a great deal about her work. She's in predominantly financial services, and we had a very rich conversation, and coincidentally, it was really about what does it mean for us to be climate coaches. And the two of us arrived at pretty much the same conclusion. It's about really figuring out where we are and just doing something. We don't have to be experts. And I'm now borrowing Sue's words, the realization that she said that, you know, we don't have to know everything about climate change. We can just learn as we go along. But the main thing is that, you know, we apply our coaching skills and we create the space and the safety and meet our clients where they are and gently accompany them on their journey towards I suppose, you know, whether you want to use ecological terminology or sustainability, but, you know, really the end game is to care for humanity. And if we care about humanity, then it is inevitable that, you know, we will care for nature and our environment. So that's it. Sue, feel free to jump in.
That's great, Ruby. Thank you. Sue, do you want a couple of words?
Yeah, and I would just echo, it was a fantastic conversation with Ruby, but very grateful to be paired up. And we covered quite a lot. I mean, the other thing we touched on was the complexity, which I know has been mentioned, but the fact that people, even in the same space, in with the same aims, will have different truths. So if you're a consultant, if you're a scientist, if you're an activist, so it's understanding that actually there is not one truth, even in this space, and helping people to understand other truths. But also the sort of skills that we can help people employ. People generally in this space have a very, very strong purpose, but the skills around the emotional intelligence skills, the resilience skills, the communication influence skills that we can really help people with, that will be the enablers for them. And that's where we're really kind of good people to be able to be working with them. So very rich. Thank you, Ruby.
Thank you.
That's some wonderful points there, Sue. I think, you know, again, we all find our different paths and we're all got different strengths, but actually the strengths of coaches is to help people with the, you know, let's introduce them back to nature again. I think Christiana was mentioning that, and to saying, you know, to rediscover their connection with nature. And also their connection with their emotions as well. I think those are the areas where we have got particular strengths. And I'm just going to let Deborah have come in, and then we're going to hand back to Lydia for the future of the political pod. So, and Deborah, a couple of words.
Yeah, it's just a question.
Also. Yes.
It's just a question. Do you feel comfortable when we say to help people connect to nature, do you feel comfortable to call this spiritual intelligence? Because actually I came to a point that I start naming this capability as developing our own spiritual intelligence. Mm. And because we are a bunch of coaches, I thought, can I have your feedback on that? Or does it still seems to be?
Absolutely. I mean, I would 100%, yes.
Thank you. That was just, thank you very much. If I see a lot of people doing that, so okay.
If you agree, put your thumbs up.
Thanks.
In course, thanks, Deborah. I think we have to be cautious around that way. I think we have to be cautious around that.
Yes,
by
we do.
The word spiritual can mean, have other connotations for some people, and that may shut them down to the whole process. So it's really about who you're coaching and how that will land with them. Yes. If you can word what you mean by spiritual in different terms as well, then that concept, yes.
Yeah, Nick. Quickly.
Jack, if I may, just picking up on something Vasim said, which I thought relates to a lot of what we've just been talking about, which is the inevitability that we are all, whatever generation, whatever our background, on some kind of transition. And as coaches, you know, let's just think about that in very simple terms. Where are you now? Where are you trying to get to? What is the pathway? How does it feel? What's painful? What's exciting? What motivates you with that journey? You know, we don't have to be the experts, but we are. I think the oldest coaching model has always been one of being on a journey, you know, and I think that all these transitions, every individual is going to have their own transition. There's no universal model, but we are all committed to a transition towards a more sustainable, a more ecologically viable future. But apart from that, where you start from, what the journey is and where you end up is going to be individual. And the coach's job, I guess, is to journey with them, not to hold all the signposts, you know, or have their foot on the accelerator or brake, whatever other metaphor you want to use.
Great. Thank you, Nick. And I'm very much aware of time. And I think we've had some wonderful points made, and Lydia's been very, very good about putting them in the chat. So I'm going to hand back now to Lydia, and she's going to talk a little bit about what's coming up in the political pod. Thank you, everyone, for your contributions. Really valuable.
Yeah, okay. But I think the last word I'll give back to Wasim, just to give you a heads up there, Wasim. I just want to say, well, obviously, Diana is stepping back, and as Jackie said, Fiona, Jackie and myself are stepping forward. And also Katarzyna, who couldn't join us today. And we also know that Ruby's also working on the playbook as a ongoing actual action that the political pod has taken last year and into this year. And I think Diana and Ruby are working on that in the background, and we can't wait to hear from you once it's germinated, or to the sufficient shoots that you are happy to share and discuss it. So the next month is February the 8th, and we're going to do a peer coaching, and I think lots of what's come up today might be really relevant to discuss, and anyone can bring their case and challenge and ask all the others to be coached. So a peer coaching where we as coaches hold the space for ourselves to one person or two people to have a challenge, and we can coach you together on that challenge. And Fiona and I have held space last year, maybe two or three times is a political pod. But I think as has been mentioned, it's a very emotional type of coaching. We all have our own challenges with it, whether we're digesting it or finding it very, very hard to find the right pathway, our choices, our decisions, our own lack of influence or our frustrations. All those are things that we can put forward as something that we would like support. So this is a vulnerable space that we can be open and share. And we won't record next time because it's a very personal thing. So please join us and bring forward a challenge if you want to before the meeting. Feel free to bring forward a challenge. And Aya San's having her own challenge, which is fun. Anyway, I want to hand back now, if that's okay, to Wasim.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I just wanted to take a moment to really appreciate all the sentiments that's been expressed by everybody throughout the session. I really can understand how, this can be stressful even just to take, you know, and to think about even when we're sitting behind our screens. But I think that it's really positive at the same time. I think that it's, I want to go back to that, to the point that Nick made about transitioning, you know, and I think that this stress is really beneficial for us in reminding us that we're living beings that continue to evolve, and that we and that these emotions that we're feeling can become our gateway into connecting with ourselves and then with others, and finding and through understanding where we are and the world, you know, and our role and helping us all get out of this crisis that we're facing, and then we're much more able to understand what our clients, your clients are facing, and their challenges, and what they it is that they would like to achieve, and then developing, you know, being as tailored as possible with the support that's being provided to them. And I really like this idea of small steps as well, and influencing as much as possible, because in reality, there are small steps, and there's only the present moment. And sometimes if we want to think about changing the world in one moment and one COP, for example, then it's we set ourselves for failure. So I think it's much more sensible for us to celebrate the small victories and keep making those steps and influencing everybody that we can on various levels whenever possible. I just wanted to leave it on this positive note, that there is hope, and that I really salute all the work that you're doing as climate coaches, because it's an area that I didn't know about until recently when I started working with the wonderful people from the Climate Coaching Alliance. And I think it's really a very important one. And maybe a very, very last point that I want to make that could maybe help with alleviating some of that stress is that we're really not expected to understand the whole process. I don't think it's possible for us to all be experts in everything, but each one of us has their own skills and stories and gifts to give the world, and we need to continue to nourish those and reach out to like-minded people, and then us working together, I believe that we can make this world a better place. But thank you so much for inviting me to speak at the session, and I'm really happy to have taken part in this. Thank you so much.
It'd be wonderful to have you, Wasim. Thank you for your wisdom.
Yes, thank you.
And thank you to everyone for joining us today, and we hope that you will come and join us either on the 8th of February or in future pods, where we're going to be introducing some very interesting speakers. I'm going to give you a little taster. Some really, really influential, interesting speakers are coming up. So keep tuned. Thanks, everybody. And Lydia, for the last word? No? Okay. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Wasim. Thank you for joining. And do keep in contact with us.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.